I was weighing in at about 70 stone, and my worst part of my addiction, it was 20,000 plus calories per day.
What sort of things would you eat in one day?
It wasn't in the day, it was 24/7. You just wouldn't function normally, you wouldn't sleep, it was just constantly grazing and binge eating, and it was just constant chocolate crisps, fast food, anything, everything. It's same addiction sort of thing as people who drink and take drugs.
So you couldn't sleep, could you?
No, you just catnap during the day. You just it's just on your mind that you just want to eat, because you want to bury the feelings, those feelings, demons as I call them, which obviously I've dealt with now and moved on.
Right. And try to explain to our listeners how you get to the point where you end up eating so much each day.
I think what it is, it's a combination of a few things. It wasn't for me, it was a combination of issues surrounding my childhood and at school. I was bullied severely at school for being tall. That was one of the things. There was another thing in home at home. And also, I was brought up by my father that food was always an issue. We always clear our plates whether we wanted to or not. My sisters were made to eat, the food that they obviously didn't want to eat, and same with me, really. So it was like forced onto us. And then it just spiraled really out of control when I was at work. I went through sort of failed relationships, and I just had these sort of feelings in my head, which I never really knew what they were. And then I just turned to food because it was bought, turned, or should I say, drilled into us when we were younger. So it was food for me, and that was what I turned to dull those feelings, really.
Can I ask what you would have for breakfast, for example?
It would be a packet of bacon and 6 rounds of bread, and that would be like bacon sandwich, and that would start the day, as I call it. But obviously, doing the night and doing the morning, it would be a combination of chocolate and crisps as well.
And for lunch, you'd
And
order in
for
a takeaway, would you? Or something like that.
yeah, it'd be a takeaway or yeah, it was just constantly eating 24/7, because the depression, which now I realise, there's ways and means of dealing with that. And but then it was just food. I just wanted food to dull those feelings.
Did you ever go to the GP and say, I've got these horrible feelings, it's leading to me behaving in this particular way, and I need some help?
Well, I went to the GP way back in, I think it was about 86, and I said to him then that my weight is getting an issue now. I'm struggling to ride my bike, which I was, and he just said, "Well, ride it more then," and that was it. That was the help,
And is that when you're a post? Were you a postman then, Paul?
No, yeah, well, I just left the post office then, and yes, it was that was the help I got from the GP then.
Sure.
Ride your bike more. Well, that doesn't deal with the feelings in my head, and there was no psychological side really help at all, really.
But I think about 10 years or so ago, you did lose a lot of weight, didn't you?
Yes,
So
I
how did you
did.
manage to do that?
Well, that was 2003, I had to go to hospital for emergency operation for another issue. I had a hernia, and they had to get me to the hospital. And the only way they could get me there was take the wall of my flat out. I was living in at the time, because there was no other physical way they could get me there.
How much did you weigh then,
And
Paul?
well, I didn't know. I hadn't been out, I just didn't know. So anyway, when I finally got to the hospital and they weighed me, I was about 56 stone, and needed major surgery, which went ahead. But when I was reading in the newspaper, because the local newspaper followed my story, that really hit home, I think, how bad I'd got. But there was still no help forthcoming. It was I was stuck. I had to stay in hospital for like 18 months. There was nowhere for me to live. But all I wanted to do really was I was just push and pull at the post, and all I wanted to do was deal with these demons in my head. And I kept asking for help, and it wasn't forthcoming. Then I say in 2003, just after I recovered from that operation, they suggested that I had help with gastric surgery. They applied for funding, it was turned down. And then 2 years later, it was applied for again. It was turned down again. They said I wasn't didn't have major illness, which I didn't really. I never had any heart problems or anything associated like that. And then it was turned down again 2 years after that, because there was issues with people with funding again. So by then I was getting towards the lowest part of my life really, and my weight had crept up to 70 stone. So I thought, that's enough. I'm not going to lie in this bed, eat myself to death anymore. I'm going to get to grips with why I'm doing it. So I phoned my doctor and I said to him, I want to speak to someone, someone professional who I can want to find out the reason why. And he said, well, I'm afraid there's nothing available on the NHS. What come to your house at the time, councillor wise? So I said, well, not a problem. I said, I'll sort it out privately then. Which I did, and for the last few years I've been seeing a counsellor, and I think that's what's changed my life, and obviously my determination as well, because I wanted this to happen, and got to grips with, dealt with the issues what were in my head when I was younger, and through my life, and that's what's made the changes really, and obviously my determination to get my life back.
It's probably worth explaining, Paul, what a gastric bypass physically does to you, how it enables you to lose weight.
Yes, it. What happens is they bypass your normal stomach. They make a new stomach where your food goes. It's down to the surgeon who actually does this operation, what size he thinks that should be. He made mine the size of an egg to start with. And then obviously it swells up a little bit after that as you go from like the really small purified types of food, and you have a 12-week program after that that you build up into eating normal food.
And do you know how much that operation cost?
No, I don't. Because it was a combination of the gastric bypass surgery, and also I had to have some skin removed off my leg so I could mobilize out of bed.
But
So
you.
that was a combination of both.
Right. But it would have been thousands of pounds. Compare that to what your care cost before the operation. Tell our listeners how much that cost and equipment and so on.
Well, the care cost was running at about £100,000 a year. And why they decided to do the gastric bypass surgery then was because equipment needed was about £60,000.
Right. In terms of the operation to remove excess skin, an estimate of around £30,000, although it could be more if if more operations were needed. What do you think of NHS Suffolk's stance at the moment that they would only consider the operation to remove excess skin once a patient's weight has stabilised?
Yeah, the patient's weight is, I can see where they're coming from there, but they should look at it as an individual. I'm totally different to everybody else. My extreme size in the first place would make me an ideal candidate for the loose skin to be removed now. I'm still immobilized, properly immobilized. I still need a powered wheelchair to get around.
And just explain why that is it because the skin is so heavy, or if you try to walk, what happens?
The skin is so heavy. The largest part I've got is round, which they call your apron, which is your tummy.
Yes.
It hangs on one side of on my right side, and if you look at the picture on the front of the newspaper today on the Sun, you can actually see it. It's on the as you're looking at the picture, it's on the right, and that piece alone, without the other pieces, which you can't really see because of my top, but that piece alone goes right round your tummy, and it's also skin round the back. So that piece alone would probably weigh in excess of three stone.
Gosh.
And then on my legs, it's on my right leg, it's the same. As I say, I've already had 10 kilos removed off there, so I could mobilise. And my arms, I've got major issues with my arms, but my arms are not too bad.
But the
I can
operation to remove the 10 kilos, sorry
live
to
with them.
interrupt, Paul, that was, as you put it, so you could mobilize. So that was seen as essential, so you could get around.
So I could actually get out of bed.
Okay.
Yes, if I don't, you asked me, and also the question about what happens when I do mobilize. Well, if I mobilize too much, without the use of my powered wheelchair, the skin splits. It tears at the weakest point, and it's always underneath my tummy and behind my knee joint. The behind my knee joint, where the biggest part is on my right thigh, it's quite easy, and underneath my tummy as well, it quite easy gets infected, and then I have to get nurses to come in and look after it, which is another drain on the NHS. And that's the thing I don't want to happen. I don't want to get to the stage where the skin, which will increase the loose skin as my weight is coming off, so that loose skin will get extreme to the stage where it will make me immobile again and more reliant on the NHS again. And I don't want that. So that's why I'm asking them to remove one part round me apron now, so I can mobilise a lot more independently and doing a lot more for myself.
A number of listeners are texting or tweeting to ask if you could contribute financially to the further excess skin operations. Is that a possibility? I know you've been paid for some interviews. Is there a possibility?
Well, I've been paid for some interviews because I still need help now, and I have to finance that myself. My benefits do not cover that.
So there's no way you could can contribute.
No, because the cost of the operation and aftercare for the apicnectomy is it's well about £30,000.
Right. Let me. I know you're happy to talk to some of our listeners. Here's Diana in
Yes.
East Yorkshire and David in Southport. Hello, both of you.
Hi, how are you?
Hello.
Hi. Hi, thanks for coming on the programme. I'm very well, thanks, David. Diana, go ahead, talk to Paul Mason.
Hi, Paul.
Hello.
I don't want to offend you, but I do, yeah, I suppose really with all your loose skin now, there isn't anything else but surgery that's going to get rid of that. But prior to that, though, my opinion is you eat too much. Not you personally, one eats too much, doesn't exercise enough, equals weight gain. And I've yet to hear anybody ever say, I've put weight on because I actually love the taste of food and I eat too much. They've always been bullied. I mean, my sister was bullied. She was bullied as a child. She didn't put that weight. I mean, our family, we're all short. So I always say I don't have a weight problem. Mine's under height. You know, if I was 6 foot tall, I would be the perfect weight. But I always have to struggle with it. But I've only ever put on... well, for instance, I used to run a lot. And since I've had arthritis in my knees, I can't run. I've put on 3 stone. Now, it hasn't got any more than 3 stone, and I'm fighting like hell to get that 3 stone off, which I don't think I will do because I've got to the age now where it just wants to stay. But I'll still keep doing it.
So what's your, Diana, what's your question? Sorry for interrupting. What's your question to Paul?
It's... I don't know what to say. Why does everybody blame it on bullying? Why don't we, you know, if you're responsible for what you put in your own mouth? Nobody makes you eat.
Sorry to interrupt, but would you say that to someone who's got a drink problem, a drug problem? Would that be the same?
If somebody's got a drink problem or a drug problem, they're buying the drink and drugs themselves. And so the blame culture lies absolutely on them. But, you know, having listened to you earlier in the show, when you said at one point you were 56 stone and then you ballooned to 70 stone and that you couldn't get out of the house, to get you to hospital, they had to take a wall out to get you out. Who was giving you the food? Who was supplying you with the food? That's the person that I believe should be blamed. If you can't go out and get the food yourself, somebody is supplying you with the food. If you can't go out and buy the food, then, you know, if you ask somebody to buy the food and that person has got your interests best at heart, then that person would say, I'm not going to buy you 10,000 calories of food every day. I will buy you 2,000 calories of food, which is the normal. So it's not you to blame. It's the person who's been feeding you. If you can't go out and buy the food yourself, then somebody has got to take the blame for putting the food in your mouth. Not physically, you put the food in the mouth yourself, but putting the food in front of you. And that person, if you're going to run a blame culture through this, that's the person, or those are the people who need to look to themselves very carefully and say, hang on a minute, this chap is suffering to this degree now because of my actions.
Go ahead, Paul.
There's...
Paul, you can't answer it, can you?
David.
Well, I can. What I was going to say is, there's plenty of fast food outlets which deliver, and I'm afraid to say, when you have an addiction, they quite happily provide you with the food and they'll deliver it. And if you can't even get to the door, they'll come into your house and give it to you. Mm. And anybody with an addiction, they'll get it anyway. It doesn't matter what. You must have it, you know. And, you know, it's just an endless supply of fast food outlets that will deliver.
As you can imagine, Paul, opinion from our listeners is split on whether the NHS should pay for the further operation now. For example, Jean says, yes, of course the NHS should, because he's helped himself by losing all that weight. And in the end, they saved the NHS a fortune in the long run. Roger on Twitter, Roger Rawlings, says, yes, he should be applauded. Mike on Twitter says, yes, it's disgraceful that the NHS pays for homeopathy, but not this. This will encourage people to lose weight and save money in the long term. And Addy says, yes, it should. Mac on Twitter says, congratulations to Paul. His weight gain was self-inflicted and as sure should pick up the cost for any... So congratulations to you for losing the weight, but your weight gain was self-inflicted and so you should pick up the cost for any surgery. And Nicholas... says let him pay for this surgery himself. It's effectively cosmetic surgery. Saul says, I think the NHS should pay. It's a quality of life issue and an incentive to keep the weight off. On text, this listener doesn't leave their name. I'm sorry, but I have no sympathy for Paul. Yes, we've all comfort eaten at some point, but come on, to 70 stone. He's trying to blame this on being forced to finish his meal as a child. What a load of rubbish. He seems to be blaming everyone else but himself. And so it goes on. So in terms of balancing the weight, do you think that's a possibility? Are you, I mean, you don't really have a choice, I suppose, Paul, do you? You will have to wait to get to a certain point before the NHS will even consider whether you should have this operation on the NHS.
Yes, quite true. It's quite true. And that lady who just made that last comment there about it wasn't just one thing about clearing my plate when I was a child. It's a combination of a few things. So you can't sort of point your finger at one thing. Mm. And also, yes, I do look back on my life. Yes, I should have made some changes, but I was asking all the while for that little bit of help. It was, and it was just not forthcoming. So,
here's Natalie in London. Hi, Natalie.
Hi, yeah.
Hi, yes, go ahead.
I'm training with a bit of support for Paul. I can't, I'm feeling so angry with those last two callers. I can't believe what they were saying to him. I don't know Paul's history and why he went into this spiral of overeating, but I mean, from what I've heard, it sounds like he has an eating disorder like I do. I have anorexia. It's just, you know, she was saying about her sister being bullied, but she didn't develop weight problems. Well, it's because everyone's minds are set up in a different way. We're all different personalities. We all have different weaknesses. We all have different ways of showing our pain. And, you know, that's why everyone doesn't get alcoholic when they get stressed, or why everyone doesn't turn to drugs if they're depressed, because different things are triggered in our brains. It doesn't matter that one person doesn't turn, you know. I completely turn to food, and you know, would you say that I'm not entitled to any help on the NHS because I'm close to starving myself to death, because it's my fault because of the traumas I had when I was a child? No, it's just,
you have anorexia, do you, Natalie?
Yes, I do, yes. Right. I've been anorexic since I was 14. I'm 33 now. Mm. And at the moment, I'm having a serious relapse. At one point in my recovery, I managed to have two boys. And even now, you know, I was on a waiting list for a year for therapy with the NHS. I was begging for help before my weight got to a desperate point. Mm. But nobody, because my weight was okay in their eyes, so it wasn't on death's door, they just left me and left me and left me. And now it's got to crisis point, and I'm trying to cope with two young boys, and my husband is trying to keep it together. And, you know, you go to the GP and they're just not interested.
Well, you can't say all GPs are not interested, you know.
Well,
it depends who you see on what day.
I didn't say all GPs. I'm saying my story,
sure,
and who,
sure,
I've seen. And yes, he chased up a referral to an eating disorders unit, but the same eating disorders unit had discharged me, I think, 6 months earlier when I was a healthier weight, even though I was telling them that I was really struggling with my thoughts. Mm. So they leave it until you get to the point where you are desperate.
But is that because there will be someone who is desperate at the time when your weight's sort of reasonable for an anorexic, if I can put it like that? There might be another Natalie who needs that therapy right there and then.
Yeah, and I would in no way want to deny anyone of anything.
Can I just butt in?
Of course you can, Paul. Talk to Natalie.
Can I just butt in?
Yeah.
Natalie.
Yeah,
hello. I've got two friends who I've kept in contact with. One lady I met in hospital, she was anorexic, and she's now married and settled down. She's got two children, but she still has relapses, and she has major issues still and bad days. But the same issues with anorexic people are exactly the same as people who overeat. And those issues are exactly the same. The problems, I mean, not the issues, sorry. The problems are exactly the same.
It's easy, isn't it? It becomes a security. It becomes a way of withdrawing,
yes,
from the world that you find so painful to be in. It's not to do,
yeah, it does. It,
you know, I adore food. I'm not starving myself. So for someone to say you're just eating because, you know, it's not about the food, really. It's like a symptom. It's like, you know, like a snotty nose is a symptom of a cold. It's that eating is just a way of showing your pain,
well,
almost.
When you eat, what that does, it actually releases an endorphin in your blood, and that makes you feel good. And certain foods in certain people trigger that endorphin a lot quicker, or a lot more. And that's why some ladies say chocolate at a certain time of month, you know.
And for me, starving, starving has the same effect. It makes me feel good.
Yes, that's quite true. Yeah.
It is a drug. Food is a drug. It's like using drugs or alcohol. It's exactly the same problem. It just uses food instead. Except it's even harder because at least alcohol, you can live a life. You don't have to face it every day, whereas food, you have to face every day.
Yes, because we've all got to eat at the end of the day to survive, haven't we?
Exactly, so there's no way of avoiding it, no way around it.
No, that's quite true. If you like to speak to the lady afterwards, I'll speak to you off air if you want.
Oh, that's really sweet, thank you.